Welcome back. Week 6 recap here on the Mountain West Connection podcast. Jeremy Moss hanging out with Matt Kennerly on a nice Sunday morning out here. You got good weather this AM?
So far so good, yeah. Not a cloud in the sky. It's supposed to be a little warmer. I wonder if that's because of Tim Drueter's hot seat.
Oh, there you go. No, it should be cooler, man. It was a close loss, and we'll get to that later, but not a blowout loss because they actually made a comeback against Nevada.
Slightly, yes.
We'll get to that game later, but MWCConnection.com, that's our good old website. Check it out. Facebook, I might do a few Facebook Live videos this week, so if you have any suggestions, and since this is at the beginning of the podcast, I know some people are still listening and have not given up once they heard our voice pop on, so check out for that stuff. Facebook page, Mountain West Connection, Twitter, MWC Connection, where we post funny GIFs about opponents and hot seats, like Drueter and Nevada fans doing smirking at halftime, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
All right, so, excuse me, folks. Here's what we're going to do today. We got 6 games, and since we're at mid-season point, I guess we'll do some mid-season show, perhaps. We'll discuss later.
All right.
About what that might be. Offline, we don't need to bore the people with... Actually, one thing I would say, Rayshon Lewis is freshman of the year. Is that correct? Is that easy to say?
Well, he's well on his way, yeah. I mean, we can talk about more contenders a little bit later, but he's definitely in the conversation.
Definitely. We'll talk about that later. But here's what we're going to start off with. We're at the midway point just about there, and the big hubbub, you get the automatic bid from Air Force, Houston, Group of Five guys, the outsiders, the teams that don't make a lot of money, apparently, or not apparently, factually. So with Houston losing last night, I decided to do a good old thing I kind of ripped off but didn't rip off when Dr. Saturday was actually a good website to read college football on, or at least fun. They did like a ranking, like here's what a team with one loss would be, two loss would be, the kind of the pecking order.
Mm-hmm.
And so late last night with Houston losing, I'm like, well, let me go look at that because as I aptly mentioned in the race for a New Year's Six bowl game, conference games really, really, really matter at this point.
Yeah. And I mean, I think we learned yesterday of just watching the entire slate of college football, it's hard to go undefeated.
You know, it's also hard playing in a monsoon in Raleigh.
Yeah, that too. And Annapolis and, you know, up and down the East Coast yesterday. I sympathize because that was a rough afternoon for a lot of teams back East.
Yeah, it's kind of fun to watch, but not being there. I applaud those fans who made it to those games because I was watching a bit of NC State and Notre Dame. And then watching Houston Navy, I'm like, I know Annapolis doesn't play in a dome, but it was so dark it seemed like they played inside.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, I've read that NC State had like 60,000 fans for that Notre Dame game. And I think that a lot of Mountain West teams could probably learn something from that kind of dedication.
Hey, yeah, New Mexico. What the hell? We'll get to them in a minute. Not because of the loss, but come on.
Yeah.
But let's get back on track here. So I put a little ranking together last night, and I didn't put in our stream. Shoot, I'll get in here a second. But basically, Boise State and Western Michigan, smooth sailing the rest away.
As long as they keep.
So, yeah, well, I think Dan Wolken or a million people said going undefeated, it's hard.
Yeah,
it's not easy. I don't care how good your team is, it's very, very, very difficult. If it was easy, and with these teams playing. Not the toughest schedules like in a Sun Belt or American or Mountain West or MAC. There'd be a lot more undefeated teams, but it's hard. And so my ranking came out to be with Houston losing to Navy. What was it, 46-40? Yes.
Yes.
A couple defensive touchdowns for Navy there. Here's my ranking. You can agree or disagree. My number one team is Boise State, undefeated Boise State,
mm-hmm.
followed by undefeated Western Michigan.
Yes.
Good? Fair?
That's fair, yeah.
And Perry, looking at one of the guys from Bronco Nation News put out the Sagarin. SOS. Boise State's SOS is up there pretty well, at least at this point. And then it gets interesting. You have a lot of one-loss teams. So I went ahead and put, and they're all from the American right here, 3 Navy, 4 Memphis, 5 Tulsa, 6 South Florida, then 7 Houston, all with finishing with a single loss.
Okay. So I have some trouble with this.
Okay, you can be fine. This is like at midnight last night. I'm like, this will be a good idea, conversation starter.
So I think that at a minimum, you probably have to put South Florida right underneath Western Michigan. And the reason I think that is because all of those teams you mentioned besides South Florida are going to have to play each other at some point. You know, sure. The Bulls are the only team in that list that come from the American East division. And so, you know, they're not going to be running into much trouble in that division, I don't think. Like going, you know, playing Cincinnati might be a challenge. You know, playing East Carolina on a short week might be a little bit of a challenge, but you know, they may not run into that much resistance until they get to the conference title game.
And maybe I think
I think that benefits them. And their only loss to date was against Florida State. So it's not like they lost, you know, to some team that they shouldn't have, like other teams on this list. Like, if you look at the teams that Memphis has beaten, they haven't really beaten anybody yet besides maybe Temple. And, you know, Tulsa hasn't really... Yeah, and Tulsa hasn't really beaten much of anybody yet. So if they go on a run, yes. But, you know, I would put South Florida up there. I would also still put one loss Houston on there because of that same reason. Because if Navy does lose twice, which is the only scenario in which Houston does come back to win the division at this point, you know, their resume is going to be right up there with a lot of these other ones. And I think it would be stronger than a one loss Navy or a one loss Memphis, teams like that. Okay.
I got it. So I guess I was looking at South Florida. I think I may have been looking at schedule more than who they play, because you're right, the East is not as tough, so you're right, easier pass, so probably should put South Florida up higher. But the reason I put Houston so low, because maybe it's tough. This is it's a lot of back and forth. Navy, I think Navy is good at three. Is that safe to say?
Yeah,
or do you put South Florida maybe?
I would. Well, I mean, personally, I would probably put South Florida ahead of Navy, but
they play each other, so it's a toss up essentially if they both run the table, right?
Yeah.
And I guess I put Houston so low because, yes, well, they have a better schedule. They play Tulsa. They play Memphis. I guess you're right. Maybe I should put Houston the next highest, the best one-loss team after Navy. Mm-hmm. I don't know. This is late. So it's a fun conversation. I guess I should put – so you're saying I should probably put Houston 5 after South Florida?
I mean, because – yeah, I probably would, just because, you know, South Florida and Navy do play in 3 weeks at the end of the month.
And okay. Yeah, you're right. I see your point there.
So it's not necessarily the easiest road for the front runner in that West division out there.
No, that makes a good point. I guess you're right. If Houston does have one loss and Tulsa has one loss, I'm assuming too much and overthinking this. I'm assuming if Tulsa only has one loss, which means they beat Houston, they beat whoever else is in their division, they end up with only the one loss.
Yeah.
So I guess this might be too early to do this, but whatever.
Never too early.
No, but both points are valid. You're saying, I get your point. We're saying if Houston has one loss, they should be ahead of team Memphis and Tulsa. But yeah. I guess my thinking was if they run the table, they're going to have to be ahead because they beat that team.
Mm-hmm.
So then I put really quick to wrap it up. I guess I put 8, a one loss Boise State team after all the American teams, assuming if they lose more than one more time. And then somebody mentioned this morning, if you have Houston where they're at, have Air Force, which okay. I put one loss Air Force at 9. And I wasn't sure what to do with Toledo. I put them at 10. Is that too low for Toledo?
I mean, it might be, just because, you know, if you look at who they've played so far, the schedule is still a little bit soft. Like, their best win might be against the team they just beat, which is Eastern Michigan, of all teams.
4-2 Eastern Michigan.
And it's not to say they won't run up against some challenges, but I think we won't really know how their resume stacks up until their season finale at Western Michigan. So, you know, they may run into some trouble against Central Michigan. They may run into some trouble against Akron, you know, because both of those are pretty tough teams. But it's really hard to say how that's going to shake out. They got to get to the MAC championship first, which is something they haven't done in quite a while.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And then I put one loss Aztecs, the one loss the other Broncos, Western Michigan with one loss. So I put a 12-team ranking this week. This rank will fluctuate. It could be 5 teams, could be 15 teams. Probably not 15, but about 10 scenarios each week. Do you think the Aztecs is a decent spot for them that low?
I think they're going to need to catch a few breaks, but you know, the one thing they're going to have to do regardless is win the conference.
Yep.
And they're still in the running for doing that, so that's really all you can say about that for now. Just kind of have to keep winning, basically.
Yeah. So watch out for this. If I thought this was pretty fun, I used to do kind of a BCS rankings projection, which did pretty well. So if you like this, let me know. If you don't like it, I'll probably still be up on the website each early Sunday morning. But it's fun to look at this point, especially with Houston losing, opens up, as you can see, at least a dozen more scenarios of where teams should or should not be. But let's get to the games. Like I said, okay, here's two things. One thing I want to say about attendance, which I do sympathize a little bit. Why did they? Because I get the point of scheduling Boise State and New Mexico on Friday nights. I don't think the people in the Mountain West realize. Do you know what the Balloon Festival is in Albuquerque?
All I know is that's a very big event down there.
It is huge. I'm talking like gigantic, ridiculousness. It's just I've been there once because when I was at the University of Utah, we had a water polo tournament, and luckily for me, I worked for a hotel chain. I can get a cheap hotel, like $50. Mm-hmm. If you wanted the hotel, I don't know how they let that slide because how busy they are and packed. $250 minimum. If you're staying for that weekend, you got to pay it. Even at the crappiest hotel, it's $200 a night to stay there in that area. It's like hundreds of hot air balloons. We saw a little bit in the morning because we had early games driving around by the university and around town. It's amazing, but I'll give a little. I'm okay with a little bit of the attendance being an issue, but there was hardly anybody there for a ranked team coming to town. Who you beat last year?
Yeah. Well, maybe they made a wise decision because Boise State kind of blew them away.
Maybe, but still, it's like, come on.
How do you not... I mean, I get what you're saying. But, yeah, I mean, it's hard to really say.
So, this game, 49-21. I listened to most on the radio. Then I got home like, oh, geez, this is a blowout once I actually saw the second quarter. But a couple of things. Taron Gibson was supposed to play, did not. Game time decision, had a hamstring issue, which he suffered against San Jose State the week prior. So, he was out, which... as we know, without him in the game, they lost to Rutgers. Not that he would have helped win this game, but he's their number one player on the team. Without him, they struggle.
Well, yes and no. I think if you look at the rushing numbers, they may have done just fine without him because they averaged over 6 yards of carry as a team. You know, Lamar Jordan was the one who ended up doing most of the heavy lifting as a runner. He had 139 yards to lead the Lobos. But even behind him, you know, Tyrone Owens had 82 yards on just 7 carries. You know, Richard McCorley had 40 yards on 7 carries. So they were, you know, getting chunks of yardage when they needed it. But at the same time, you know, Boise State was able to rack up 10 tackles for loss.
Yep.
Which is the kind of production that you want against this triple option offense. Like, you know, they allowed 382 yards, but they forced New Mexico into a lot of really long third and downs, which is not where New Mexico wants to be. Like, I'm looking at, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 situations where New Mexico was third down and 9 or more.
And without Austin Apodaca throwing the ball, you know what's coming.
And Lamar Jordan really struggled as a passer in this game.
Which we kind of
He was only 4 of 14, 39 yards, 1 interception. I think Boise ended up sacking him 3 times. And really, you know, you can run all you want, but if they put you in third and long situation and you can't throw, that's a bad sign. And that's basically what doomed New Mexico early. They only converted 1 of their first 7 third downs in the first half.
Yeah.
And in that same time, you know, Boise State really ran away with it.
Yeah, they're 6 of 16 on third downs. It's like we said, New Mexico before this year, even last year, I guess when Austin Apodaca this year, he showed he could throw a little bit more. But it's what we said. If they could, like when they had even Cole Gallucci at quarterback, if they could pretend to throw, but when it's 3rd and 8 and you know they can't run, you're just going to do single coverage and just in case they do pass and bring as many guys up to stop that running attack. And they did it when it counts. Also, penalties, a big blow, 12 for 88 compared to 2 for 15. But man, Brett Rypien, this, like you said, and I think I said too, if this Boise offense shows up against any team, they'd beat probably 90% of the teams in the country.
Yeah, good. Brett Rypien is back, at least for 1 week.
It helps play New Mexico.
It does help play New Mexico. You know, he was 21 of 28, you know, almost 400 yards, 5 touchdowns, which was by far his best game of the season. And, I mean, he did all that in spite of the fact that, you know, the Lobos, despite their struggles, really kind of shut down the running game. You know, McNichols did score twice, but he only had 54 yards on 21 carries. You know, that didn't really end up mattering because they were able to kind of move the ball at will through the air. Like, they didn't have any chunk plays of 10 plus yards on the ground, but they had 9 of them through the passing attack.
Yeah, they had 4 guys catch a pass out of the 21. 9 each for Ter Spurbeck and Cedric Wilson, who had, what, 350 combined, had all but 26 yards. And most of this was first half, because I think Rypien had, if I'm correct, almost 300 first half passing yards.
Yep.
And I don't know. New Mexico's, their defense is, to take, it's what we said, they, if their defense could be maybe average, they'd be pretty good. But it wasn't. A reason New Mexico lost as well. Turnovers, that's why they won last year. That's why they've been close in other games. big plays, which happened running attack, but no turnovers, no reds, no stop the red zones like they did last year. No Boise missing a field goal when I think last year they went, what, four drives and got 3 points out of it or something with two turnovers, a blocked field goal and a turnover on downs or something. Defense was not there at all. They three tackles for a loss, two pass breakups. That's about it. A couple hurries, but this team, Boise, I don't know if we're waiting for them to be this good, but this we both expected the Lobos not to win, but we expected it to be in the past where they will cause trouble for Boise State. And 14 of these points were in the fourth quarter when Brian Harsin flying let up and kind of rotated in second and third tier players on their line and everywhere on the field, essentially.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, credit to Boise, because I think we were expecting this team to show up pretty much all season. And, you know,
kinda.
The defense has been good off and on, and the offense has been good off and on, but this was the most complete 60 minutes that they played all season, basically.
Yeah, even giving up the yards to New Mexico, I'm like, whatever, that happens. They'll do this against any team.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, this won't be the last time that they run into the triple option this year, so hopefully they don't forget how to defend against it, but... You know, when the defense can, you know, penetrate as much as they did, that's, you know, that's basically your answer to, you know, giving up a lot of those big runs, you know, that 6 yards a carry average. And yeah, I mean, that's really all there is to say about it. I think, you know, Boise State's going to be moving on and they're going to be really hard to beat if they're this good week in and week out.
For sure. All right, let's go into our next game. Air Force versus Wyoming. It's officially bowling time. Oh, well, not officially. Officially bowling pun time. Wyoming's 4-2 on the year, 2-0 in conference. They could be 5-1 had they not stumbled versus Eastern Michigan, which would be ridiculous to say if they're 5-1. But Air Force again, their rushing offense, or not again, but I guess it's not again, but I guess last week they didn't need to against Navy. But man, how is Wyoming's defense this much better after last year being pretty much terrible? Any explanation for why that's the case?
I think they're just, you know, a young group who's starting to come together. I mean, especially in that front seven, I think, you know, they ended up losing Carl Granderson. You know, I think it was about midway through the second quarter or midway through the third quarter. But, you know, they didn't really miss him as a pass rusher because the front seven was really attacking the backfield, especially those linebackers like Lucas Waka. You know, he ended up leading the team with 9 tackles, had 1 sack, you know, and they ended up, you know, with 7 tackles for loss, which again is the kind of, you know, you want that kind of disruption out of your front seven, and they got it against this Air Force running attack. And I think that this is a team that's really starting to come together on that defensive side of the ball in a way that they just didn't last year.
Yeah, they're like Air Force, like we always say, if you play this type of team, like New Mexico Air Force, teams that rely heavy on the run game, stop the big running plays. Air Force had a couple, but only Nate Romine had more than 12 carries, and part of that was the pass rush and pressure to get out of the pocket having to run, but they normally have like 3 guys with 10 to 15 carries. DJ Johnson, just 7. Jacoby Owens was shut down, 5 for only 17. It's McVay had 5 for 39. Good average, and even DJ Johnson, 7 for 73, but both of those had 2 huge plays to kind of offset the average. They weren't... Wyoming just kind of stifled them. Like I said, tackles for loss, they had so many. The passing game wasn't really there. They made Romine go 6 of 19. 3 interceptions. Wyoming had, I need to look this up, but I know they had another defensive touchdown. I think they have 5 defensive touchdowns, which could be the most in the country. And that's a big deal. Turnover, like Sandy, last year, weren't they plus 22 or something? So like if you can get short fields plus whatever, you're going to be a much better team, even if, like, Brian Hill had an okay game. Josh Allen looked pretty good, nothing amazing, but the defense stole the show in this game. And this is, I think, the go back to the Eastern Michigan game, 3 straight games with a defensive touchdown.
Yeah, and I mean, even when the Cowboys weren't, you know, forcing turnovers, they were really stifling, you know, Air Force drives in a way that no other team had this season. You know, the Falcons were only 4-14 on third down, which was way below their average. I think I had mentioned in the preview that they were one of 2 teams in the conference that have been converting more than 50% of their third down tries. And, you know, when you're basically forcing them to, you know, punt the ball away or forcing turnovers the way that Wyoming was, that, is kind of, that's your recipe for an upset bid, and that's kind of how they pulled it
off. Here's a couple notes really quick, not game related, but 12 total forced fumbles for Wyoming, 4 recovered, and they also have the 3 touchdowns off 10 interceptions this year. I'm pulling up their plus minus, but this is a team, like I said, Brian Hill played okay, Josh Allen played okay. Josh Allen's, I don't know, he's probably, would he be your number 2 QB in the conference right now, Josh Allen?
He might be. I mean, he was a little bit erratic down the stretch, I think.
Welcome to Nebraska.
and that really allowed Air Force to kind of rally in the fourth quarter. You know, they had a couple of big plays. They had that 75-yard touchdown to Jalen Robinette. You know, they had the kind of the swing pass that McVay was able to get into the open field and score. I think that, you know, he showed a little bit of toughness when they needed him to. You know, they were, I think it was like third down or something like that on their last drive, and he was able to scramble and get like 15 yards in the first down. And that was really kind of an element that was missing. Like if you were one of those people that stayed up really late for that Northern Illinois game, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Or even Eastern Michigan, where he almost split the defenders, or the QB draw versus Colorado State last week.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, he showed toughness in spite of the fact that, you know, Air Force did sack him 3 times, you know, so it wasn't as though they weren't getting to the quarterback at all. But, you know, when the game looked like it might have been slipping away, he stepped up and he made plays with both his arm and his leg.
He's pretty impressive. Just really quick, so they're plus 3 on the year, plus 0.5 per game. But if you take away that Nebraska game, not that you can, but he had, what, 4 turnovers? Six total. I think interceptions were 4. Regardless, it would be about anywhere from plus 6 to plus 8 if he did okay in that game and didn't just force stuff in that final quarter. So while they're only plus 3, it's one game really skews that, but that's defensive scores. That's how teams that, not the ones that good offensively, but that's how teams that, say, struggle on offense or struggle to move the ball, that's how you get victories you probably shouldn't have. And Wyoming sits atop the Mountain Division with Boise State 2-0, and is there anything really wrong with Air Force, or was it that Wyoming's just... This is also the second straight time Wyoming beat Air Force at home.
I mean, I don't know if there's anything particularly wrong with Air Force other than the fact that, you know, defensive line just kind of, or Wyoming's defensive line, rather, I think they just kind of won the turnover battle. They won the turnover battle, and they won kind of that battle with their offensive line from Air Force. And so, you know, it's like any other team. If you can stop the Air Force running game and force Romine to make throws, that's not necessarily their strength. And that kind of caught up with
them. Yeah, I guess Romine had 2 deep ball. I guess if he's not going what he did versus previous games, was like 10 of 14. Or what was the game where Robinette had like almost 3 touchdowns, like 200 yards? Is that versus Navy, or is that a week prior?
I think that might have been a week prior.
Yeah, if he has that game, great, but he's only 6 of 19. You can't have him throw that many times.
Yeah, Wyoming, by the way, they're one of 7 teams in the country with at least 10 interceptions on the season so far.
Hello, what's his name? Crap, I had the name in front of me. Dang, Andrew Wingard. I was like, I say something funny, but no. They might be going bowling because they still get to play New Mexico. They still get to play, I don't know what to make of Utah State or Colorado State, but Wyoming, this division with the, we'll get to that game later, Colorado State, Utah State, is this division... Well, we'll hold off on this till our midseason show. I was going to say, can every team go bowling like we said 2 years ago? We'll get to that later because that'll be an interesting topic. And I don't want to spend time looking it up, and we'll have another show eventually at some point. So next game, if you saw this game, you were either in the stands or lived in a Hawaiian island. Hawaii 34, San Jose State 17. I should also screenshot this because Hawaii is 2-0 and leads the West Division.
Hashtag never forget.
Man, Jerue Brown seems to, from what I could tell from looking at our box score recap, because there is no visual video evidence of what happened besides the haka I posted on our website with a recap or highlight recap to be kind of funny, but Jerue Brown is the real deal. Went for a 287, yeah, I mean, 2 touchdowns, and rushed for another one as well. 3 total scores.
I mean, he's had 2 starts now against 2... teams, yeah, still. You know, but I mean, they've looked like a totally different team just looking at the box score with him under center. Like he didn't have to throw all that much against Nevada last week, but he still completed 83% of his passes, and they put a little more on his shoulders this week. And he really answered the bell. You know, he was 24 of 33, 287 yards, you know, 8.7 yards per attempt, 2 touchdowns, no turnovers. He's given them that boost in efficiency that I never really thought Woolsey could. And yeah, I mean, that's kind of a credit to him kind of stepping up. And, you know, these are teams that are beatable, I think. Like, you know, Nevada's not the greatest team in the West, and neither is San Jose State. I think those are pretty clear by now. But, you know, you still got to make efforts against those teams. And Drew Brown has really stepped up in that regard. I've been pleasantly surprised, even though I haven't been able to see them at all.
But also the defense, they picked off Kenny Potter 3 times.
Yeah. I mean, where did that come from?
It came from the defense doing good stuff. I don't know. We thought to be one of the most efficient quarterbacks. Yeah, receiving crew was lacking with Tyler Winston out for academic reasons, but he doesn't throw that many picks, and 3 against a Hawaii team, which we saw what Cal did, but that's Cal and Davis Webb, but Hawaii secondary or defensive general has never been known the past couple years to be that good, so give credit to that. Again, Hawaii for defense, tipping the ball or getting to the quarterback. They sacked Potter 6 times, 11 tackles for a loss in this game, so he was not comfortable sitting back there at all this game.
Yeah, and that's, I think that might be the most shocking thing of all, to be honest. Sacks. But that's, I mean, I don't know if that says more about Hawaii's front 7 or if that says more about San Jose State's offensive line.
Give Hawaii
line.
Credit this game. I'll go that because, way.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I'll do the same thing. It's just that seems to be like a real problem for San Jose State now, because I think we had talked very briefly in our preview that, you know, the Spartans are dead last in the conference in tackles for loss allowed. They've allowed 54 through 6 games.
That also helps with running game running game being pretty bad.
Yeah, and they've also given up 29 sacks now on the season. And that is by far the worst in the conference. So, you know, if you can't keep your quarterback upright, there's really only so much he can do. And, you know, if I'm not mistaken, I thought they had outgained them on total offense, but they didn't. Just kidding.
That's okay. No.
But I mean, you know, they were able to extend drives a little more than Hawaii was. You know, Hawaii was only 2 of 13 on third downs compared to San Jose State's 6 of 15. But man, you know, I feel bad for Kenny Potter because that offensive line is just not getting it done.
Yeah, they're last, not just 29 last in the conference, that's last in FBS by 2 sacks.
Yikes.
So yeah, you got North Texas, Miami, Ohio, Central Michigan, UMass, and Kent State, and Texas State is the other team with 20 sacks on the year. Texas State, impressive, done it in 5 games with 20 sacks allowed. Everybody else has played 6. It's also midseason stuff we're talking about, but Hawaii 3-2. There's still no way they're going to the bowl game, right?
I mean, if they keep playing at this level, they're going to cause trouble for a lot of teams going forward.
They have UMass and Fresno. And those could be wins. That's 5 wins. Fresno on the road, though.
I mean, when was the last time Hawaii looked this impressive on the mainland? That's kind of the big question.
Good point.
I think.
This was a road game. We'll see when they play. They do get Air Force or mainland. They get New Mexico in the mainland. They get UNLV. I'm looking at it backwards here. Hold on. They go to Air Force and to San Diego State, so they go to Fresno. We may not really know because those first two are pretty tough games. But you're right. Last time, the last time they got a win on the mainland.
That, you know, the last, I have the answer for you because I was just up. The last time they won on the mainland.
Hold on. They beat UNLV.
Dang. Wrong. They beat San Jose State in 2014. Okay, it was that really weird 13-0 game that the Spartans lost 2 years ago.
Who was their quarterback for Hawaii? Do you have that? Or for San Jose State? That wasn't David Fells, was it?
No, that would have been, I think that would have been Kenny Potter, if I'm not mistaken. Or
Joe Gray, maybe, yeah. Okay. Okay, it's interesting. All right, so let's move on to the next game. This conference is it's not so bland anymore. We got some fun going on.
If only we could watch Hawaii.
I know who I blame. People who use VPNs in Hawaii. Thanks a lot, guys. Thanks a lot for screwing everybody else. And also,
Yeah, we applaud your initiative, but yeah,
I use that for Netflix to get to Netflix Europe, and or more specifically Netflix UK, which is amazing. But yeah, come on, help us out. I got to give a little blame to San Jose State, because what's your equipment like if you can't stream this game at least on the Mountain West Network? Because I talked to our guy Tyler Bischoff, who does, he's right for us. He does stuff for the conference, or at least he did. I think he did like women's basketball and volleyball, some minor sports, calling their games. He's like, we use like four cameras and we're fine and easy graphics. It's not that hard. So I don't know what Spartans are lacking, but yeah, moving on is the next game. Fresno State at Nevada.
Pillow fight of the year.
I got to watch more than I thought I'd be able to watch this game. I was like, there's nothing on I wanted to watch, really. There's no other Mountain West games I wanted to tune in or see, because I can't watch Hawaii. So I'm like, okay, I'm watched the half, 21-6. I'm like, really? Nevada's going to run away with this. Lo and behold, Fresno State can move the football when it wants to sometimes. I don't know what to make, because I saw a progression in the second half, a botched fumble, a sack, and then a good passing play. This team, Fresno's team, looks so inconsistent. There's a couple plays a game, they might look pretty good. Or then they look like, oh yeah, we're watching Fresno State here. Is that a fair assessment?
I'm fairly convinced that the reason this margin was as close as it was has more to do with Nevada than it does with Fresno State. Because, and for a couple of reasons, right? First of all, Nevada's defensive line is just as bad as Fresno's.
They mentioned that.
Get that out of the way.
Those guys
early
in the game, like, I wouldn't be surprised if two backs have 200 yards each.
Yeah, and you know they, you know, both James Butler and Dontell James got close. You know, Butler ended up with 175 yards on 37 carries.
Yeah, 37.
And you know, Dontell James had his own career high. He was 169 yards, a score on 27 carries. But I think that a lot of that had to do with the fact that neither team was really able to get much of a push up front. You know, Fresno State only had two tackles for loss for the entire game. Nevada had just three. And, you know, they were, you know, both teams were fairly even as far as being able to run the football in that regard. But, you know, at the same time, you know, Chase and Virgil finally had probably his best 60 minutes of the year. There was still a little bit of inconsistency, but if you look at the box score, you know, he finally got his completion percentage above 50%, which is kind of nice.
Kudos.
You know, he was 16 of 27, 197 yards and a score. But, you know, even then his erraticism really kind of, you know, Zach Klein saw the field, which I didn't expect. And then he fumbled and Nevada turned that into some points.
There,
so
that's the game right there.
I don't know how many Bulldogs fans out there are still clamoring for quarterback controversy. Please stop.
Yeah. Virgil's fine.
But I mean, what it really came down to in the end is just, you know, I talked in the preview that I wrote, they just needed to stop James Butler. And especially in those short yardage situations where he was really kind of money throughout the season.
Because what did you put on Twitter? You put something on there about like three, four of his last carries were first downs or something, or third down attempts. You had something where...
Well, if you'd read the game preview, I had talked about like their success rate on like, you know, third and fourth downs. And it was 12 of his 14 carries on third downs to date had gone for first downs. And, you know, they did a better job in the first half of really containing him than they did in the second half. Because if you look at their third down conversions, you know, James Butler had like three or four down the stretch where it was like third and short. Boom. And they just couldn't stop him. And it was there. And that decisive drive that, you know, put the game away for Nevada, they ran the ball 12 times in a row. And then through that third touchdown to Wyatt Demps, who, by the way, had a very good game, which I think we should mention. You know, he had three touchdowns on the day, you know, nine catches on nine targets, mind you. So he caught every single pass that was thrown to him, and he had 124 yards. So
who's guarding him? Come on. I mean,
yeah, so it's just like they weren't able to stop the running game when they needed to the most, just like every other week. And it seemed like especially the offensive tackles for Fresno State are just not good. You know, they only had, you know, the Wolfpack only had three tackles for loss, but all three of those came from Malik Reed, who more or less dominated David Patterson at right tackle all afternoon. And especially on that last drive, I don't know, did you happen to see that?
Yeah, I watched the whole second half, yeah.
So that's really where a lot of Fresno State fans were frustrated. And I admit that I was one of them because of the play calling.
Me too, I was going to bring that up, yeah.
If you didn't watch the game, you know, Fresno State got to first and goal with about 30 seconds left at the 5-yard line. And they let Virgil throw it four times in a row. I'm not, and let me make this clear. I'm not so upset about the fact that they let him throw it four times in a row. It was the, you know, the play calling that they had was just like really bad play calling. Like on first down, he throws a fade to Aaron Peck, and Peck, to his credit, is almost able to come down with it. Like he has it in his hands for a brief moment, and then just it, you know, he can't hang on to it basically. You know, if he puts a little more air under it and allows Peck to go up and get it, that's probably a touchdown. Second down, you know, he throws it to basically nobody.
It technically says Keyshawn Johnson was the intended target.
Yeah, but he throws it basically to nobody in the other corner of the end zone. You know, and third down, they throw again. I forget exactly what the play call was.
Okay, and it was that on fourth down pass to Dontell James they attempted to.
Or, yeah, it was a swing pass. So it basically goes nowhere, and they have to burn their last time out. What? And then on fourth down, you know, Virgil drops back to pass, and he barely has any time because Reed has beaten Patterson again. So he's flushed out of the pocket, and he tries to throw it to his receiver, incomplete, game over. You know, I'm not so mad at the fact that they let Virgil, they put the ball in his hands to make a play and win the game. I'm okay with that. I just wish that they had called for some patterns over the middle of the field. Like, is that really so hard? Why do you have to throw to the corner of the end zone all the time? Because those are like low percentage plays that they're asking him to make, you know?
I guess their point would be if he doesn't catch it, it's going to be incomplete out of bounds. So there's no very limited chance for a turnover. But,
well, I mean, at that point, it's do or die anyway. So what's the problem? Point.
Also, they had a timeout. Dontell James is running the ball very well. Run him one time.
And that is what many Fresno State
at least once. With no timeouts, I'm fine with passing every time. But even with the amount of time they had left, they could have done that. But run him once so Nevada's not waiting for the pass play, knowing what's going to come where they can just bring the pressure. You have a condensed field sitting inside your 10-yard line, so you can do single coverage, maybe drop one linebacker middle of the field just in case and bring seven guys. Run it once. You have a timeout to lose. A swing pass was probably their attempt at getting him the ball, but a swing pass that close, you go sideways and then up? Come on. Run it once. He could get 8 yards. If he runs it, gets some one or two. Virgil's athletic enough. Hurry up, do a QB sneak or something. You had chances to run it once, use your timeout, or hurry up. And if you get to the one and do a sneak or something like that, where you could run it again after the timeout. It wasn't like there's 20 seconds left in four plays. They had plenty of time to run it once, maybe twice, with the timeout they had in hand.
Yeah, and I mean the other thing is too is they had chances early in the game. And they could have gone for it and settled for field goals instead. So I don't necessarily want to put all of it on one situation or one player because, you know, I think there was one instance where it was like fourth and one. And if I remember correctly, it was, you know, the drive where they got to the Nevada.
Yeah, 40. I remember that. Yeah.
It's fourth and one and you decide to punt. Like, why? Why are you punting? If you can't get 1 yard on the ground against this Nevada front,
what are you doing?
What are you doing, basically? So, yeah, I mean, this was probably the best effort that the team has put forth all year, and it just wasn't enough because they couldn't get to Stewart enough. You know, Tyler Stewart had an okay game. Like, they did limit the big plays like I talked about when I wrote my preview. But, you know, again, at a certain point, something's got to give, and you know, down the stretch, they just couldn't make
plays. And then also play calling was weird too. Like, not the last drive, but there's points where they're trying to hustle quick and they're just throwing all these short passes.
Yeah, weird. That too.
All right, let's go to the next game because this game makes me sad because, well, a little bit. Well, I'm just saying, they're so close. Like, the second half was competitive, which is nice. A nice comeback by Fresno, but looking how well, like, just thinking of what they could have done, or I'm not a coach, but it's like should have done. It's like I don't want to question Drewder, but not to rehash, but James, give him the ball one time down the stretch. Throw downfield more. That's, I don't know. Catch the ball. Aaron Peck also, he needs to catch the ball better. Come on, he had two catches. He had so many catches. A couple more he could have caught, but let's move on. Next game, is it a Utah State game now?
Colorado State's homecoming. A successful endeavor for the Rams, 31-24.
Also had a Garrett Grayson sighting during the game on the sideline, talking about this game. Now with the New Orleans Saints. I don't know what to make. This Colorado State team is the exact same team I thought in the offseason. I put my hands up. I don't know who they are, but they won this game, played very well. But they just been so up and down this year. And really quick before we dive into the game, Rams won 31-24. Great second half. Shut out the Aggies in the second half. News we're not aware of at the moment. We're doing this Sunday morning, but Colin Hill's having an MRI on his knee, left the game. So we don't know if it's an ACL, a sprain, MCL, just a big bruise or something. But he left the game, returned out of uniform, and so Nick Stevens take over. So that's a big thing to watch. But when Colin Hill is in, playing against this Utah State defense, it's been pretty good, or we thought was pretty good. He lit him up. He not lit him up, but the offense played well. He had 200 yards passing, no picks, two touchdowns, and the running game showed up for once. Like I think we mentioned this in a preview. Running game has to show up because it's been like Jekyll and Hyde for the past 6 weeks as well.
Yeah, this was the kind of game I was waiting for from their top two backs. Like Izzy Matthews, you know, he scuffled a little bit, but he did score twice, but he only had 73 yards on 23 carries. But Dalen Dawkins had probably his best game of the year. You know, he was the one I think that really kind of kept him in the game and really brought them back when they were, you know, rallying in the second half. He had 125 yards, 14 carries. But yeah, like you said, you know, Hill, you know, hung tough. It was kind of rough going in the first half, but you know, he came back and, you know, he was especially good down the stretch. Like I'm trying to look at what his, you know, pass progression was like. You know, I think he was only 6 for his first 12. But, you know, he played better after halftime. And I think he was something like 9 for his last 12 or something
like
that.
He's been pretty well.
So he played much better after halftime, and I think that's a credit to his receivers as well, because they were finding big plays after halftime in the same way that they really didn't in the first half. You know, there was the big 60-yard catch and run to Michael Gallup, which was a big deal. But, yeah, they were just finding big plays, and, you know, at the same time, you kind of have to wonder what happened to Utah State.
I'm wondering if Marty English or somebody replaced Marty English on the defensive side for the Rams, because in the first half, I could easily see Kent Myers. Here comes a QB draw. Kent Myers, a play action he's going to run. Kent Myers, I'm just going to run it no matter what. Could not stop Kent Myers. Yeah, he had 50 yards and two touchdowns on the ground. Not great, but anytime Myers took off, there were yards to be had. But they shut out a pretty good Utah State offense because the running game showed up because Devontae Mays, as we got fooled by the depth chart again, because apparently it's the same depth chart from week one. We're dummies. But Mays hasn't suited up. He didn't play. Tony Lindsay, however you say it. I heard both ways. Had a big game, 137 yards. Kent Myers, like I said, two touchdowns. And then, dude, Rashad Lewis, he had 100 total yards. He ran the ball twice and had 99 receiving yards. But second half, Kent Myers was stuffled. The running game was stuffled. Rams took advantage of that, and offense came alive. And even when Nick Stevens came in late on a crucial drive late in the game, he helped. He went 37 yards overall, but that late drive when he replaced, I think it was around the 30-yard line of Utah State, went down and got a touchdown.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of have to wonder, too, whether they weren't as aggressive down the stretch as they needed
to be. Utah State, or?
I'm looking at the Utah State, yeah, because I'm looking at their drive chart, and I'm noticing, I didn't get a chance to watch the game because, of course, CBS Sports Network is dumb, but they had this drive early in the fourth quarter. They drive to the CSU 36, and they punt.
That's weird.
Can you explain that?
I'm trying to
what happened with there that they didn't
decide? I was going back and forth in this game. Let me look at the drive chart really quick. Trying to think what, because I was watching this, and when I saw, I kind of turned away to watch Aztecs.
It was right after Colorado State.
Yeah,
they
scored a touchdown quickly. Might add, you five plays, 90 yards. I know. I guess they're I'm trying to think what they said, because it was what, fourth? It's fourth and nine, so that does give you pause.
Oh, okay.
But sense. You're not going to kick a 53-yard field goal. I agree. I don't recall exactly. I don't think I saw this progression of plays, but I guess they didn't trust the offense because it was bad. Like, if you look previously, they punted on six plays. They punted on three plays. They punted on seven plays. They fumbled on their early possession, first play of the second half, four plays and a punt. And so I'm wondering, I'm guessing they didn't trust their offense because it was so poor. And you got the lead. I think there's too much time, because had there been 4 minutes, 5 minutes, even 6 minutes, I might be able to justify a punt there. But there was 10 and a half minutes left of this game. You're up a touchdown, and they just scored. They had the momentum because they scored on their previous two possessions. This wasn't, and you're losing as well. At this point, you're down. It's not like you had this big lead. They scored 14 points in a row. It does, and then you get a touchback, so that's only 16 yards. Why not take a shot? And if they pick you off at the 10, that's even better for you. You know what I mean? Than a punt that goes to the end zone. You don't even pin him in the corner. Mm-hmm. I'm just thinking they didn't trust the offense, and they thought their defense could make a play. And they did. Credit to them. They did go force Rams three and out, but you're losing. That doesn't get you any points. And then they turn it. But then here's the odd thing. It's later in the game. It's like, oh, crap, maybe we do got to do it. Fourth and 10 at the 27, they do go for it. And it gets broken up by Jamal Hicks, and they pretty much game over. And then there's another late interception to seal the game when about midfield. But I'm just guessing, trying to think back, they just didn't trust the offense. Like, well, our defense has been pretty good, even though it really wasn't the previous two possessions. But that's my sideline analysis, I guess, of why. But the Mountain Division's crazy.
So I don't know if you were paying attention on Twitter last night, but you know, low key, a lot of Utah State fans aren't happy with Matt Wells right now. Like our old contributor, you know, Parker.
He has
Robertson,
the hot takes. I love Parker.
He was basically saying that, you know, when was the last time Matt Wells outcoached anybody? And like, would you agree with that assessment? Like, is it a coaching thing or is it a talent thing?
I don't think it's a talent thing too much, especially in this game, because like I said, they brought in Rashad Lewis, who had over 100 yards as a true freshman. They have Kent Myers, who looked well in the first half. I do see it's a coaching thing, because here's where I'll kind of defend and not defend Matt Wells. I thought Utah State would just run away with this game. Here's the thing where it's a coaching issue, where the Rams defense actually made adjustments and apparently learned how to tackle in the second half, where Utah State didn't make any changes. They did the exact same thing in the first. Give them credit, they were doing that well. But once you give up those, particularly, like you said, that one play, that one drive where they chose to pump for it, that's where they should have mixed it up and done something else, because it wasn't working. Even before that, they were like, right off the drive chart, they're going six plays, five plays, four plays, punting the ball. Things weren't working. You'd think after maybe the second time they have to punt after only having a short drive of, I guess they fumbled as well in there too, but they didn't change things when they realized the Rams were figuring them out. And that's a coaching. I don't know the last time you outcoached somebody, but here's the thing. If you're in their division, you play the West, who's not all that great for the most part. They did beat Boise State last year, so maybe that's it. But then again, you had, what, six turnovers forced? I don't know how that outcoaching that is, if defense steps up to make so many turnovers. But no, you're right, because looking last year too, like, it's hard when you have Trekkie Keaton back because people want him to play. When he played BYU last year, coach, they switched back and forth. When they played Akron in the bowl game, they switched back and forth. Did not go well. And so I get his point, where that's an issue where it's a dumb coaching move. If you want him to get in plays, have something beforehand, but every other series is not the way to go, because we've seen that so many times where that doesn't work.
Yeah, somebody put out there on Twitter last night that since Utah State beat Boise last year, they've gone 3-9. Ooh. But keep your head up, Aggies fans, because you get to play Fresno State in 2 weeks.
They have a bye week this week?
I believe
Lucky
so,
Lucky
yes.
Duckies, you get to play Fresno State.
So you get 2 weeks to prepare for Fresno State. There's no excuses at that point.
Oh, man. All right, next game. San Diego State, UNLV. I decided not to watch this game at the beginning because, well, it's San Diego State, UNLV, right? But then I see, hey, it's 10-7. That's why I kind of started to flip back and forth, and I think I missed that drive you're pointing out for the last game. But UNLV, crap, by my box score, they had a defensive touchdown, I believe, a scoop and score. Is that correct?
That was their only touchdown of the night.
Making sure.
They strip sacked. They sacked Chapman for a big loss, and then they forced a fumble, and then basically their defensive player picked it up, ran with it for a pretty easy
touchdown.
That's
what I just want to double check, because my internet's kind of being wonky right now. But what I saw from UNLV, when I saw it was 10-7 before Pumphrey, I think, tied or broke the Mountain West record for rushing touchdowns for a career, they were actually getting to Chapman and like sacking him, causing him pressure. But then I was chatting with somebody on Twitter. They're like, I think UNLV ran out of gas, because that's kind of the point where Aztecs like, screw it, let's turn up the heat here and take care of business. And UNLV kind of just folded faded near the end.
I mean, ultimately, they really had nothing to offer the Aztecs, especially on offense. You know, they both finished, 5 of 14 on third downs.
I just
saw
the box score of Dalton Steed. Oh, jeez.
But Dalton Steed, it's going to be a learning experience. But he was 2 of 12, 9 yards, 1 interception. And I mean, they basically harassed him all night long. And that's a credit to the Aztecs defense, really, coming back with a vengeance in a big way. And, even more than that, though, they really shut down the Rebels' running attack, too. Like, you would have expected them to lean on Lexington Thomas and Charles Williams, and they tried to. But, they only combined for 48 yards on 18 carries together. And the entire story of the game. San Diego State was, they were getting into the backfield. They were making plays. Calvin Munson had a tackle for a loss. Alex Barrett had a tackle for a loss. Nobody on the team had more than 5 tackles, but that's because they were basically shutting UNLV drives down pretty early. Like, their longest drive of the game was their next to last one, and it only went 34
yards.
Here's
an interesting stat. It's mentioning the tackles. UNLV had 92 total tackles. San Diego State, 48. That's just weird.
That tells you a lot. And I mean, I think a lot of it too, I watched most of this game, and I think that, Snead was hurt a little bit by the fact that outside of Devontae Boyd, who caught both of his passes.
They have no wide receivers. They have nobody.
Well, it's not that they don't have wide receivers. It's that they have very inexperienced wide receivers. Like, the only way that Mekhi Stevenson showed up on the depth chart was on a 12-yard, flag sweep, if I remember correctly. So, I think that this was one of those growing pains kind of games where, the lack of experience, I think, really hurt them against a talented team like San Diego State. On the flip side, San Diego State won this game the way they're going to win a lot of games in conference. They ran the ball, because both Pumphrey and Penny went over 100 yards. Penny in particular averaged almost 8 yards a carry. And Christian Chapman had a pretty good game, too. He was 15 of 20, 215 yards, 1 touchdown, no turnovers besides the lone touchdown for the Rebels. Yeah, but they didn't really need him to make a lot of plays because the 1-2 attack on the ground really got the job done for him. And so that's a credit to San Diego State to really get off to a nice start in conference play.
Yeah, they're sitting at 4-1, 1-0 in the league. UNLV, they need some work in this. Is it Dalton Snead a true freshman, I want to say, or is he a redshirt freshman?
I believe he's a redshirt.
Young guy still, so they have a lot to work on. They hung around for a while with their defense, which is a good credit for the Rebels there, but you're not going to hold back these guys from all that often for the Aztecs. So if you want to take a positive for the Rebels, I guess that's it.
Yeah.
All right, that's our game. Do we have anything else we need to discuss? Should we do some sort of mid-season show this week, perhaps, if we can squeeze it in?
If the fans want it,
If they want it. I don't know how many fans we have.
Even if they don't want
yes,
it, let's
that's
do
my
it anyway.
Plan. We will we'll think of a plan, but we'll do our normal show previewing this week. Maybe we'll get you guys involved. We'll put maybe some spreadsheet together really quick so you kind of vote on a few things. That's always fun to do. So I guess since I have to do it now if you're listening at this point. we'll put something together. Maybe we'll do a little Facebook video about taking submissions or something. But yeah, we're almost halfway through the season, and there's a lot more I'd talk about tonight or whenever you're listening to this, but we're already at the 55-minute mark. So we don't want to make it too long. So we'll get to those midseason stuff later on to talk about. We'll do our quick bowling or not bowling game and some other fun stuff. But any last second things you want to add to the listeners, maybe?
No, I think we're
good. I will add one thing. The Mountain West Conference Twitter feed does not know what a reverse is. So just saying. You know that Nevada touchdown pass by the receiver? They call that a reverse.
Yeah. Oh, well. It was a halfback pass.
Or yeah, it was nowhere near reversing it. Whatever. I saw it, I'm like, oh, come on. So that's my only kind of thing I wanted to mention there, my last parting shots. But we're on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Blog Talk Radio, most likely. Also, for those who are hearing those political ads, they're done. There's an error, so you don't need to hear from whatever race you're hearing from. But those are gone, so you can smile when we play the one or two of those that you're not hearing, whatever you want to call that type of stuff. But that's our show. MWCConnection.com is our website. Again, we'll be back next week or whenever you want to hear us next time. Please and thank you for listening. And like, we got a lot of crap this weekend. Yeah, we're biased against your team, so deal with it.